In 333 BC, Alexander the Great wintered his troops in the city of Gordium, which is the capital of Phrygia in Asia Minor. And the kings of Phrygia had their palace in Gordium, and within the palace was a knot so complicated that it was believed that nobody could ever unravel this knot. It was so impossible to unravel. And it was also, legend had it, that whoever could unravel the Gordian knot would become the king of Asia Minor. So Alexander entered the palace and was challenged to unravel the Gordian knot, and after a few seconds' thought, he unsheathed his sword and he chopped the bastard in half. Being in charge of public transport, it would be tempting sometimes to think that problems that we face could be solved with one single focused act of violence in the way that Alexander the Great tackled it, but sadly not. When I was speaking to CETA before with Bruce Hughes and Dennis Cleish a few months ago, I talked about some of the problems we faced on our public transport system, problems of overcrowded trains, with punctuality of the train system increasingly becoming an issue, about a tram system that was clogged with car traffic, and about the fact that there was an insufficient bus service for the needs of Melbourne in 2006. So that was the Gordian knot, and the Transport and Livability Statement, as I call it, Meeting Our Transport Challenges, came out on the 17th of May, and that goes a long way towards unravelling that knot. It gives us a lot of work to do in the next 5 to 10 years, but a lot of resources with which to do that work, and it's a pretty exciting time to be in public transport. I'm going to try and make this presentation work. It's the biggest single statement on transport that any Victorian government's made, and the biggest single statement by this government. $10.5 billion over 10 years, and two-thirds of that going on public transport. Although, as David and I are fond of pointing out, you can't make a distinction between public transport and roads, because 90% of public transport operates on roads. Now, I'm going to go through this fairly quickly because we want to leave time for Q&As, and some of you will be familiar with the material anyway. This graph gives you an indication of the changed environment in which we now operate, and illustrates how revolutionary the Transport and Livability Statement is. It focuses on capital spending, and it shows you that effectively it's going to double from what it has been over the last 6 years, and we've done a lot of things in the last 6 or 7 years. But going forward, it's going to be absolutely massive. The centrepiece of the statement is buses. Two-thirds of Melburnians live remote from the train or tram systems. So if they want flexible, affordable public transport, buses is the first option. We're going to build an entirely new public transport system in the next 4 years for Melbourne, an orbital bus network, smart bus, operating at 15-minute frequencies 7 days a week, good quality on-road priority and passenger information, providing mass transit for our suburban centres so that if you live in Epping and you want to get to the airport, you no longer have to go into the centre of town and out again. And where these services have been introduced in the eastern suburbs, we've seen 30 or 40% increases in patronage. We're going to swing those services out through the north and into the west. And within 4 years, the smart bus network will be 50% bigger than our tram system. That is revolutionary. As far as local buses are concerned, serving local needs, buses at the moment tend not to operate on weekends, not to operate after 5 p.m. And the average peak hour frequency of our buses is a bus every 40 minutes. Well, that has to change. We're setting new minimum service standards so that buses will operate 7 days a week. We'll run a bus service within walking distance of every home in Melbourne where it's physically possible to do so. In some cases it isn't, because of poor subdivision design we're actually physically prevented from running buses. And we'll run as many of those bus services as we can at half-hour frequencies or better. Again, this is revolutionary. Councils lobbying for more spending from state government identified social exclusion and transport exclusion as the biggest issues on their agenda. And this statement effectively meets all the demands, not just of councils, but of the bus industry themselves. Indeed, it exceeds what the bus industry have been lobbying for. And if you know the bus industry, that's a pretty remarkable achievement in its own right. Moving on to trains. We saw 11% growth in patronage on our train system in the 12 months of the 2005-2006 financial year. No wonder our train system is not as punctual as it was a few years ago. It's 25 years since the City Loop opened, and the time is right for a major capacity investment. So the government will be investing $2 billion or over $2 billion over the next 10 years in improving train capacity. Two trains equals a freeway lane. That's the trade-off that we're dealing with. And trains carry 55% of people into the CBD for work in the mornings. So we have to invest in our train system, rebuild North Melbourne Station, duplicate lines like Clifton Hill to Westgarth, triplicate lines like Caulfield to Springvale, and get new trains on order from 2010, arriving from 2010. This illustrates the challenge that faces us. Transport and livability statement's not exhaustive, and in order to eliminate overcrowding, we need to be running an extra 40-plus trains an hour in the morning peak by 2020, just in order to keep overcrowding under control. So massive investment required to deliver that. A safer rail system. One of the gratifying things about the statement in an election year was that the politicians didn't just focus on the glamorous stuff, but on some of the more neglected aspects of our train system, particularly in the area of systems and ICT. Metrol, which is the nerve centre of the train system, the dispatch system, if you like, where drivers get their instructions from, is 25 years old. It's won a heritage award, and it has processing capacity 1/20th that of a modern mobile phone. The time is right to replace Metrol. If you're ever stranded on a station platform and the staff can't tell you when the train's going to turn up, it's because the central computer system on which our train system relies is inadequate. It's 25 years old. Overhauling it's the first step to getting decent quality passenger information, and decent quality passenger information is a must in a modern transport market. This is about modal interchanges, is it? Stations? Yeah. Clearly our stations, our suburban stations, could do with investment, and that's what Transport Livability Statement gives us. Particularly, we need to invest in additional car parking capacity at outer suburban railway stations so we can get people out of their cars and onto trains before they hit the centre of town. And we need to make sure that buses and trains connect properly. So rather than just throwing money at the bus system, we'll be completely redesigning timetables so that buses and trains connect seamlessly, and that the facilities at stations allow passengers to move safely and easily between modes when they want to make those timetable connections. The next slide is basically about making it easier for people who want to use public transport to do so and giving them incentives to use public transport, initiatives which will be coming in very shortly, like free travel for seniors on Sundays, or extending the Travel Smart program, which involves individualised marketing to get people to think twice about using their cars and encourages them to walk or use public transport or cycling. It's about the flexible transport solutions, putting school buses in remote communities to better use, and taxis in remote communities and so on, using transport assets to provide transport services. Extending cycling and walking, and David might talk a little bit about that. Improving taxi services, we're legislating to set new service standards for the industry. The last time I was at Federation Square was as recently as last Friday, in very difficult and very different circumstances, dealing with complaints from predominantly Asian taxi drivers about security issues and about the racism that they face as they go about their job. And we clearly have a lot of work to do with our drivers and the rest of the taxi industry, and that work is underway. And last but not least on this slide, our DDA program, Disability Discrimination Act, there's hundreds of millions of dollars to improve the accessibility of transport assets, including a program which involved the construction of about 150 platform stops across Melbourne just in the next 4 or 5 years. So a major program in its own right. That will keep us on track to meet our federal obligations. And finally, this is my last slide. Regional Victoria had a big boost in the provincial statement, which came out in November last year. And this, transport and livability statement builds on that, as does the regional fast rail project, which is nearing completion. And that means that over the next 12 months, we'll see a 40% increase in regional train services and a 40% increase in connecting regional bus services, which is absolutely huge. So when I think about this document, I consider it to be revolutionary. I think of the Bastille during the French Revolution, the Winter Palace during the Russian Revolution, and Frankston TAFE on the 17th of May, where the Transport and Livability Statement was launched. And now I will seamlessly, in an integrated and connected manner, hand over to Mr. Anderson, who will take you through the rest of the presentation.